We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to the Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Tonight's show is presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC, Miami's premier luxury dealership is Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Visit WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Now, here's the voice of the Canes, Joe Zagacki.
And a very pleasant good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Hurricane Hotline. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours. University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga joins us here in hour number one, along with Katie Meyer. Hour number two, Eric Palms from the Orange Bowl Committee will be our guest, and we'll also preview the bowl season coming up as the Hurricanes will play in the Orange Bowl game, but they're enjoying a little bit of a break in football, and basketball has been off as well for the most part, and we'll pick it back up on Saturday when the Canes take on George Washington. 12 o'clock tip-off will be on the air at 11:30 in the morning from GW right here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM, and joining us right now is University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. Coach, good evening. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great, Joe. How about yourself?
Very good. Thank you. I've had a break here since the Boston University game. We'll be in Washington and take on George Washington on Saturday. But with this break, how have you and the team spent the time?
Well, the first thing we did is we got out on the road and did some recruiting. My staff was kind of all over the place this past weekend. And we still had some practice time. We gave the players Saturday and Sunday off, but we've had two good workouts yesterday and today. Today especially was very good.
And then George Washington coming up on Saturday. We'll be leaving for GW late on Thursday. We'll get to that game in just a moment. But you are ranked number six in the nation. The rankings came out, and a very high ranking right now inside the top 10. That has to make you feel pretty good.
Well, I would feel very good if we were ranked sixth in the country and this was March. Because that would mean we'd won an awful lot of basketball games. But we also look at several other polls, not just the AP. That's the Associated Press, and that's voted on by sports writers. And, you know, I told the team today, a lot of those guys who have voted for us, all they do is they look at records. So we're 8-0, so they think we're good. I look at the RPI. And the RPI has us 49th, Joe. So we need to kind of be a little understanding of where we are.
Right.
We've played well enough to win 8 straight games, but not good enough to beat the people we're going to have to play in these next few months. So we've got a lot of work still to do at both ends of the court.
That's kind of always the I guess, you know, the coaches always seem to have and rightfully so, a great understanding of where the team is. And sometimes, I suppose, whether it's a win or a loss, or even when you are winning, you look at your team and you say, okay, maybe not quite as good as we think, or the other way, maybe not quite as bad or as far off as we might think.
Now, that's definitely true. And I remember a few years ago when we won the ACC championship, and in our fourth game of the season, I believe it was, we lost at Florida Gulf Coast. And everybody started to write us off like, oh, they're not going to be any good. And sure enough, we went to the Sweet 16 and so did Florida Gulf Coast. Both teams were very good. They happened to be a little bit better than us that night.
I remember that Florida Gulf Coast game. And then, of course, as you mentioned, yeah, I think that was the same year we went to Hawaii and
yes.
Right, and went 1-2 in Hawaii, lost on Christmas Day, and then came home, beat LaSalle, and won 13 in a row.
No, 14 in a row there, yeah. Joe. Don't cut it short now. Hard to get those wins.
Yeah, no.
14 in a row, and those were ACC opponents that we were beating, home and away.
Right.
And this year, it's a challenge again. Three of our first four games are on the road. We're at Pittsburgh, at Georgia Tech, come home and play our arch rival, Florida State, and then we go to Clemson, who we haven't won there since 2013. And that game, I think we won like 49-44 or 49-45. We didn't even get to 50.
Kenny Kaji hit a big shot at the end of the game, if I recall correctly.
He hit a big three.
Yeah. Yep. Before we get into what the ACC is shaping up, after George Washington, we're going to go to Hawaii. And the Hawaii tournament's very interesting. We're in the second go-round of this five-year cycle, and this one takes us out to Hawaii.
Well, what we've done is we've signed a five-year contract with ESPN because we love ESPN. We love the exposure it gives our program. We think it's a very important factor in recruiting. And these events that they host are really first class. The competition is terrific. The locations are great. So we're starting a five-year contract. We play this year in Hawaii, next year in Los Angeles, right by Walt Disneyland. The next year we're in South Carolina, Charleston, then to Puerto Rico, and then we finish up in Orlando at what used to be called the Old Spice, but now is the, I think, Advocare. So that's the five-year contract with ESPN, so all these games our fans will get a chance to watch on TV.
And coming up on Saturday is George Washington. They played a very interesting schedule so far. Their last game out was against Penn State. Didn't go their way. Did have a three-game winning streak here during the course of the season. What do you see in this GW squad, a team that we played last year?
Well, the first thing you notice about GW is, they won over 20 games last year, and they've got basically their whole team returning. Secondly, they are much better at home, it seems, than they are on the road. Third, they beat a Temple team that's ranked in the top 15 teams in the country in the RPI. So you know they're very capable. They're very physical inside. They have a 6'9", I'm not sure what position he is. He guards the point guard. He's like a Ben Simmons kind of player. Ben Simmons runs the point for the Philadelphia 76ers, and he's like 6'10". This kid, his name is Yuta Wannabe. He's Japanese. He's from Japan. And he is a very hard matchup for everybody. He's their leading scorer. He can handle the ball. He can shoot the ball. He's a very creative player. He's a very hard matchup for anybody. He's 6'9". And then they have two big guys who are 6'8 and pretty thick. A young man named Arnold Toro is about 6'8, 235 or 240, and he can play inside and outside. So they're going to be a handful for us. They constantly are changing defenses from man-to-man to 2-3 zone to 1-3-1 zone. And that's what we were working on practice yesterday and today, and I thought our guys did a very good job with it. So GW is going to be a challenge. We scheduled the game because of Chris Likes, our 5'7 point guard from Washington, D.C., his family. We told them during the recruiting process that we would bring Chris back home if he decided to come to Miami. We did the same thing for Lonnie Walker and took the team to Reading, Pennsylvania, and that was a fantastic game and a fantastic homecoming for Lonnie.
Yeah, this is a team also, George Washington. They played Florida State. They played Xavier. They played Kansas State. You mentioned the game against Temple. They played Princeton, a common opponent, same team that the University of Miami has played. So they've gone up against some very good competition. You mentioned they play well at home at the Bryce George at the Smith Center. So going to be a nice challenge for your team and an early start as well.
Well, one of the things about their Florida State game was at Florida State, and I think Florida State is on 20-something, maybe 23 or 24 straight wins at home. They haven't lost at home, and they didn't lose at all last year or this year at home, so they've got a nice winning streak going. They played Kansas State on a neutral site, so that was a heck of a ball game. I watched that. And as I said, GW will present us with a lot of challenges. First, being at home, they play really well at home. They've got Wannabe, who's 6'9", and a very difficult matchup for us.
Yeah, he's averaging almost 15 points a game. Bolden is averaging about 15 points a game. Jair Bolden, a sophomore guard who's 6'4". So going into the Penn State game, he was averaging over 18 points a game during a three-game stretch. So a team that can score some points. Your offense over the last three games has been very good. And defensively, which you were concerned about at the beginning of the season, really has been a calling card for you here in the first eight games.
Well, Joe, you know what's funny? We showed our players some video yesterday as to how many defensive breakdowns we had. We were very, very fortunate. We played a subpar first half against Boston University, and we were tied at halftime 30-all. We were very fortunate that we played significantly better in the second half, and that was the difference. We can't afford to do that against the opponents that we're getting ready to play. If you look at our schedule now, we're not home for a month. We play December 5th. Our next home game is January 7th. We got to go on the road and play a true road game at George Washington, at Hawaii, at Georgia Tech, at Pittsburgh. Four straight road games plus two neutral site games thrown in there.
You always have a great feel for the opponent. I think this might be interesting to our listeners. And you had this discussion a little bit with your team prior to the Minnesota game. And then you and I talked about it briefly at the shoot-around. I said it was a clinic on coaching. And one of the things you told your team was you're not going to look at the accolades of a player or a team. You're looking at what can you break down? What is their weakness? Where are we going to attack? Those are some of the things that you're looking at. A guy might be an all-ECC player, but you have to just zero in on what can we do to affect that player. Maybe you can talk about how you view a team or view the opposition and then break it down for your team.
Well, a lot of my time is spent watching opponents. What they do, what they do well, what they do poorly. I watched the Duke-Boston College game, and on paper, prior to the game, Duke is a major favorite. Everybody knows they're the number one team in the country. They're 11-0, playing great. They've beaten a lot of really good teams. What few people know is that Boston College's perimeter game is really outstanding. Ty Bowman and Robinson and Chapman, their 1-2-3 men, are all outstanding offensive players. And they did something that obviously Coach Jimmy Christian found that would work against Duke's defense, because they scored 89 points. That may be the most points they've scored this season and maybe in several years. So when Coach Christian looked at the opponent, they said, hey, this is what we're going to run and we think this can work. And then when it starts working, you keep going back to it over and over again. And that's basically what we do with every opponent. Last year when we played North Carolina, the team that won the national championship, we beat them by 15 points. And our strategy was this. We're going to play a man-to-man, and if we can stop them in our bread-and-butter defense man-to-man, then we're going to stay with that. But because Carolina is so inside-oriented and doesn't shoot a lot of threes, we may need to utilize a zone to really guard them properly on the perimeter and inside. And as it turned out, they got ahead 11-2. We switched to the zone, and we came back and beat them by 15 points because I think they only made two threes. They were like 2-for-13 or 2-for-17 from three, and that made all the difference in the world. So you've got to identify the opponent's strengths, identify its weaknesses, try to limit what they do in terms of their strengths, and then focus on attacking their weaknesses as often as possible.
How satisfying was the Minnesota game? I know we discussed it a little bit last week. I want to revisit it this way because your team followed the marching orders almost perfectly from what you told them on the night before the game to the way they executed. How satisfying was that from a coaching perspective to see that your team did listen and that they did execute the plan?
Yeah, I think that's the most satisfying thing about coaching is your job as a coach is to come up with the plan, and the player's job is to execute the plan. And I'm going to go back a couple of years when we had Shane Larkin, Joe, and here are some of the things. We had won 14 in a row, as we talked about earlier, and then we went to Wake Forest. And I was telling our players that Wake Forest, it plays very, very fast and has a little different approach to ball screen defense than some of our opponents, and we need to be prepared for that. I don't think our players on that particular evening believed me. They thought, no, Wake Forest is at the bottom of the league. We're at the top of the league. We'll be fine. We'll just do our thing. And I said, no, we need to make some adjustments. Well, they double-teamed Shane Larkin, made him give it up, and the other guys did not read and react the way you want to in the game plan. And we ended up losing that game. When we went to Minnesota, our guys, their attention to detail was very, very keen. And it was that meeting the night before the game where everybody was nodding their head. They knew exactly what we wanted to do. They knew we wanted to put Reggie Lynch, a fantastic shot blocker, leading shot blocker in the country. We wanted to get him away from the basket and have him guard ball screens where he's actually either switching on to a guard or responsible at least for preventing dribble penetration. And that was a real challenge for him. Sometimes he did it, and DeJuan Ewell would be the recipient of a great pass from Jaquan Newton, and DeJuan would get a dunk. DeJuan had his career-high 23.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
Points because Reggie Lynch had to help so much on our guards. And that's how you have to develop a game plan. Look at the opponent's strengths and weaknesses and figure out how to attack.
All right, we're going to take a commercial break. We'll come back. We have another segment tonight with Hurricanes head coach Jim Larrañaga. And then we'll be hearing from Katie Meyer, but we'll take a break, come back and talk with Coach Yell some more. Miami and George Washington on Saturday. We'll be on the air at 11:30 with a 12 p.m. tip-off right here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. 560 WQAM.
Happy to welcome you back to the Hurricane Hotline with University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. And Miami and George Washington on Saturday, 12 o'clock tip-off, and then we'll be heading out to Hawaii for three games. All of those games here on QAM. Coach Yell back with us. And, Coach, let's talk a little bit about the ACC. And you mentioned the Duke-Boston College game. Boston College wins that one. A surprise for Duke. But this conference, again, night in and night out, there is not going to be any breathing room.
Joe, it's as good as it's probably ever been, and you say that almost every year, but it's very true. The number of terrific players and coaches and basketball programs, the focus that each of those teams have is incredible. If you look at the ACC from top to bottom, it's very hard to say this team is weak and that'll be an easy win. There just aren't any games like that. If you look at the top of the league, every year you see Duke, you see Carolina, a Louisville, a Syracuse, a Notre Dame. Those are perennial powerhouses. But then you've got Miami and Florida State are both really on a roll. Considering, you know, where those programs have been, Leonard Hamilton has done a fantastic job. Our program has certainly represented our university very, very well in these last six seasons, and now this our seventh year. And then you add to it the two Virginia schools, Virginia and Virginia Tech, are both off to great starts. You got Georgia Tech and Clemson are playing very, very well. Georgia Tech, I think, has had stubbed its toe a little bit because they've been playing without Josh Okojie, their best player. When he comes back, I'm sure they're going to pick it up and be very, very strong. Boston College has already proven how good it can play, especially at home. The league just is tough from top to bottom.
It is almost, maybe you have to explain this to the young guys, but I think when you get into ACC play, you know, you talk about a job that's 24/7. It almost becomes that way for players and coaches when you get into the ACC from game one until the ACC tournament. It's all conference games. It's almost three games a week. So they come at you rapid fire. So it's game, practice, travel, game, practice, prep, all of those things. And really, there is no time to let down or let your guard down between January and the tournament.
Well, that's, you know, when I look at – I probably should have been a football coach because I like game preparation so much. And, you know, a football schedule is pretty consistent. They take off, I believe, on Sunday. They practice Monday through Friday. They play Saturday. In basketball, it's very, very different. You know, we're going to play Clemson on Saturday and Duke on Monday.
Yeah.
When do we prepare for Duke? You know what I mean? Yeah. Here's the team that was preseason number one and just recently got knocked out of the number one spot. They got off to an 11-0 start. And we're going to have really less than one day to prepare for them because we got to return from Clemson. That's an away game. So we got to get home after an away game. So it's play and then travel and then play again on Monday. Oh, basketball is such a different sport. It goes through both semesters. So you're in the fall semester now. Our guys are just finishing up with final exams. But when we come back in January, we start spring semester. And we're playing two or three games a week. We're traveling midweek. We're missing classes. That is very, very hard on a student athlete.
Yeah.
Very, very challenging.
Before we let you go, I wanted to hit you with this, thinking about this today. I was watching a game the other night, an NBA game the other night, and it was the San Antonio-Boston Celtics game. Very high-level game. I don't know that the game was separated by two or three points the entire game. Ginobili wins it at the end, although Kyrie Irving's shot goes halfway down. The basket burps it out right at the end. And I'm thinking, you know, there are a lot of these one-and-done guys. To get into a game like that game, the NBA, that's what it's like every night to play at that level. And you have to practice at that level, play at that level. Do you think a lot of the guys that come in that are thinking about being one-and-done players understand that that's the lifestyle every single day?
Well, I think that's what they are looking forward to. They just don't know how difficult it is. Until you experience that 100 games in a single season, you know, you don't play 100 games in college. A lot of teams, a lot of players will not play 100 games in their career. Or if they do, it'll be just over 100. So that's 4 years. The NBA does it in 1 year. So for a player who's good enough to play in the NBA, he's got to completely change his routines. He's got to know it's game day almost every night. And most players, especially the real young ones, are not prepared for that. Not only are they not prepared for the physical demand, but the mental. Now, because when you're in the NBA, hey, you're playing, and then what do you do after practice? Because there's no classes to go to, there's no campus to hang out on. You're an adult. A lot of them are living on their own in apartments. They are bored. They don't know what to do. That's why a lot of these guys, they go to the clubs, they spend a lot of money. You know, they have their own, what everybody refers to as like a posse, a group of friends who hang out with them. But that's very, very different. It's very different than a college campus environment where they're with people their own age, experiencing the same things, going to classes, going to study hall, going to the weight room, going to practice, traveling with the team for games. Now, the NBA is a much, much different lifestyle. And I know, I talked to my son, who's the assistant coach with the Boston Celtics, And he tells me what his schedule is, and it's outrageous. He's up 5 o'clock in the morning, because when they play a game like they did in San Antonio, they turn around and fly the next day and have a game that night, and he's up at 5 o'clock in the morning breaking tape down.
I'm thinking, watching that game, and for any NBA game, I don't know how many possessions are in an NBA game. I don't know, 100.
That's a lot. It's right around 100.
It's got to be, and I don't know if every play is called or how, but there is communication, and that would be a lot for a 19, 20-year-old to comprehend. And it's coming at you fast. I mean, right every 15 seconds, something's coming at you.
The difference between the NBA, look, first of all, they have a 24-second clock. And they play for 48 minutes rather than 40. So the game has a lot more possessions. The strategy is still you have to score at least 1 point per possession. You've got to try to score 100 points in a game. And if you do that, if you can get to 100, 105, you got a decent chance of winning. But some of these teams now, like the Golden State Warriors, the Houston Rockets, I mean, they're scoring in bunches because they're so proficient at making three-point shots. And Mike D'Antoni wants his team to try to attempt 50 threes a game. That's outrageous.
Yeah.
Half your shots come from three. And if you make what he wants to make, like 40% of them, right? So you make 20 shots from three-point range, that's 60 points right there.
Well, I could talk to you about this stuff all night long. We went longer than we promised with you here tonight. But we're just warming you up for the first of the year when we go to an hour.
Okay, that's good for me, Joe.
All right, and I'll see you on Thursday as we go to George Washington for another important game against George Washington on Saturday afternoon.
All right, Joe. Looking forward to it.
Okay, Coach, thank you very much. All right, that's University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga joining us here on the Hurricane Hotline. When we come back, Katie Meyer joins us. That's next here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowe & Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM.
Happy to welcome you back to the Hurricane Hotline. As we continue on, we now move our attention to University of Miami women's basketball with Hurricanes head coach Katie Meyer. It's been a really very interesting non-conference season so far for the Hurricanes. And coach, you're coming off a great win on Sunday against Kentucky. So let's start there. It's a top 20 win, and you beat a top 20 team last year in the NCAA in the ACC tournament as Florida State, and you get Kentucky here in this non-conference season. So that was a great win for you.
It was great, and I really great for this team as we were evolving and you know, had some questions we had to answer. And the one thing that we answered in the last, I'd say, 3 weeks with this the gauntlet of games that we're playing is our toughness. And when our toughness shows up, we feel like we can play with anybody in the country.
I thought there were so many things that made up that game to make it a good win. Maybe you know this, but before the game and during their practices, Kentucky really was just working on Kentucky, not slighting Miami. But I think he probably felt, Coach Mitchell felt, coming off their loss to Florida Gulf Coast, he wanted to have his team focused on Kentucky. So you got a very focused team, and you're still able to beat them.
Yeah, I watched the Gulf Coast game, and I thought, okay, you know, Gulf Coast just, they played out of their minds, and it's a tough place to play, and Kentucky ran into a buzzsaw. So I thought that would be worse for us. I really thought that we would come, and they were. They played very much more focused and much more attentive in our game. But our players, I think, we just frustrated them, and we did it with different defensive schemes, and we had to change them throughout the game, as a compliment to my staff. But our offense comes and goes, but our defense just simply cannot this year. We don't have enough offensive firepower to ever take, you know, a quarter off on the defensive end. It just can't happen, and it just hasn't happened. And in the game it did happen, which the only game I'm really not happy with, it was St. John's. And other than that, we played Maryland great. We beat Michigan State. We played Colorado to a really tight ball game. So we're playing tough, but defense has to hold.
You were down 7 at the half to Kentucky and then came out and scored more points in the third quarter than you had in the first half. One quarter was more than the output of the first half. What happened at halftime? Why was there more success in the third quarter?
Well, you know, as coaches, we meet in the hallway and we try to get our adjustments, and you know, we have specific duties and roles during the games that they feedback that they're giving me, and as the coaches are giving me feedback and I'm making my notes, I hear Mesa Hoff and Erica Davenport just as loud and as ferocious as they've been all year in the locker room, saying, you know, directing their team, leading their team, but they weren't going to hear any chatter. I mean, they were going to take care of business, and they rose up, and by the time we got in the locker room, I said, everybody all right? And they're like, yep, we're good, coach. Just nodded at me like, you know, make your adjustments, and we're good. We got the pulse of the team back. So that's all it was. We were taking silly shots and having to defend, you know, some irresponsible offense, and that's hard. We can't put that much pressure on our defense. So I thought second half, third quarter, we got our pace back up. We competed, won every 50-50 ball in that quarter. And, you know, Kentucky only had two fast break points the whole game, which is ridiculous because, you know, they'd scored 100 on people. They can really score.
Erica Davenport is having a really special season for you so far. Her work rate must be off the chart. She's averaging a double-double, but if you have some kind of work rate chart, it must be in the top 1%.
Yeah, she's been very efficient on the offensive end as well, so she's always been a great defender. She's always run the floor very well. But her half-court offensive efficiency has never given us the numbers it's given, and she's near a point per possession when she's in, because she took away a lot of her turnovers. She took away a lot of the hesitation in her game. She's added more fluidity. That's a credit to Coach Blue. They work very, very hard. And her skill set has just improved. And so, you know, Miami's offense is working better when Erica's in. And she's had to carry a load. And Mesa Hoff is still coming back from that ankle and, you know, limited minutes. I'm not allowed to play Mesa a full game yet. So Erica has been playing a ton of minutes. And that's why I'm so proud of her efficiency. Because it's easy to be an efficient player when you only get 10 minutes. I mean, you can be in there, you're focused, whatever. But she's playing 30 minutes a game and being highly efficient.
I want to say, and now she's averaging a double-double. I want to say the New Orleans game, she had 19 rebounds. Which is a ridiculous number, and you touched on some of it, but how does a player improve that much from junior season to senior season, and how much of it is, okay, it's my last year, I'm going to do something special? How much of it is it from within?
Well, I think with Erica, too, you know, I do think she's one of the most improved players that we've ever coached here. I think her big jump was from her freshman year to her sophomore year. A lot of it was just body shape and conditioning, and but, you know, this year, you know, she looks around and her buddy, Kayla Prather, is not playing. You know, she's got that knee injury, and Mesa was hurt. And so as we started this season, I mean, Erica was the only proven inside presence that we had. And I think she just grew up. I mean, she just looked around and realized that she wasn't a role player anymore. And the pressure of being important, and it does funny things to players. You know, I told all of my seniors before this year, I said, you know what, I'm being honest with you. You haven't been as important. In your career, you've been great. I will love you. I love working with you. But you haven't had to go into a game with the pressure of being important. Like, if you don't play well, Miami will lose. You've been, you know, kind of couched with some talent above you. And I said, this pressure of being important, it can be great for you, and it can really have you develop your game, or you can really fold, you know. And that's going to be the story of the season. Can our seniors handle the pressure of being important? And I thought Shanice Bailey and Erica Davenport answered the bell ridiculously well this last game.
I think you just mentioned something that goes under the radar here and you don't get enough credit for, and that's your player development. You do a great job developing players. What is the program? How do you develop them from their freshman year through their senior year? Because clearly when they leave here with much better skills. Not that they weren't skilled when they get here, but you do a great job in developing all of your players.
Well, I think, number one, it's a culture, you know, and that's, you know, we're limited in the hours, and NCAA even has more limitations on how much we can practice here. The mandated day off, which means I can't even do film, even if a player requests to come in and do film. On a day off, I have to tell them no. I mean, it's getting hard to continue to develop them. So now we got to carve out of our practice time, and I got to give a huge credit to my assistant coaches, the ones I currently have and the ones I've had in the past. I mean, we have to mandate certain times, and my practices can't be 3 hours because we only have 20 hours a week. But we carve out individual skill work. We just have to. And this year's been really, really difficult. But you know, we got a young team, and they have to understand the culture.
I don't think maybe all the fans understand that in the sports and the college level. They're trying to balance it out, I guess. So for 20, you get 20 hours with your players, which has been in for a while. But this summer they mandated some more rules, which you mentioned is a day off where they are not required to do anything. Going forward with this, How important do you think it will be when you're looking at players and evaluating them to find players that want to do things on their own?
Right. And that's where it is. You know, you used to say as coaches, you know, it's a day off, you know, but you know, great players, that's when they get better. And now, you know, we went to the administration, you know, at the practice facility, and every year we've had that practice facility, which is open with a key card. They can go in and work on their own. We've been postseason every year since that was built. So there are things that happen, decisions that happen above you that people understand. You know, shooting guns, not just a rebounder, but there's a machine that will spits the ball back out to them. So if they want to go in at 10 p.m. and they can't have coaches around now, they can still make that choice. And the ones who are making that choice are playing very well for us. And, you know, you can't mandate it, but it is definitely on the flip side, as the coach, as the person who makes this overall schedule. You might give them an extra, say, hey, guys, we practice only an hour today together. That gives you some time, because I really believe that if you open up their calendar and you let them carve out their own time, they're more invested in it. You know, you make them show up all the time, make them do a skill workout. They don't get as much out of it. But when they walk their own little, you know, legs over to their, and they ask a friend to rebound, or they go and type in their code to get on the shooting machines, it's their time. And if you put your own time into something, it just means more to you. So I don't want them to just obey my rules. I want them to have the culture of investment.
We're probably drifting into a different subject here, but I would say that in our listeners, we have a lot of moms and dads who have daughters or sons that want to play or think they want to play at the Division I level, and it might be important for them to know that as you're watching the development of your kid, your child, that if they want to go play on their own, that's a good sign.
Right. Well, you know, that's the old saying, the difference between discipline and maturity. I mean, discipline is doing what you're supposed to do, even if it's not what you want to do. And then at one point you wake up and you mature and you realize that maturity is what you're supposed to do is actually what you want to do. I mean, it's your choice. You want to get better. So you've just matured. And so, you know, following the rules only gets you so far. And you know, coach-led teams don't win championships. Player-led teams win championships. I've been a part of them. And I know it comes from the locker room and it comes from your culture.
On this topic, you do a lot of recruiting. Can you explain how hard it is for kids to go from, there are fifth, sixth, seventh graders, to becoming an elite Division I basketball player?
It's very difficult to find, you know, I think the truth tellers in your life. And I ask that question to our recruits. It's like, who's your inner circle? You know, you want to get to know them. And I was like, okay, whoever shames you, like who tells you the truth, like makes you really look at yourself and really, you know, get the inside scoop on who you truly are. Because I think when they're successful young, they get a nice little cheerleading squad. They got a lot of positive feedback, but I'm not a negative coach by any stretch of the imagination, but I will tell my players the truth. If their game is off, they need to hear it. If they're being lazy, they need to hear it. You can still love them and tell them the truth. And you know, those answers are getting smaller and smaller. You know, it's just not as much out there. So, you know, instant gratification is a little easy to come by right now. And I think, you know, I like courageous listeners. I recruit kids who are courageous listeners that open up their ears and their hearts and really want to know. You know, everyone on our team, I guarantee you, every single person that wears a Miami uniform at some point in recruiting had to have asked me, Coach, what do I need to work on? If I don't hear that question, we don't offer them a scholarship.
This has been a bit of an adjustment year for you as well. You went from a veteran backcourt to a true freshman backcourt.
And yes, very, very true freshmen, and they are playing extremely well. They have a lot on them. You know, it's the transition that they had. You know, there were some unknowns, but then we had a bunch of injuries. So not only I knew that the backcourt would be new, but I didn't realize the responsibilities they've had as well. The leadership, you know, with losing Laura, losing Kayla. I'm having a Mesa out for a while. You know, Rebecca Ripley's out now too. Sarah Mortensen's injured. And so they have to, besides just being freshmen and playing a lot, they have to sort of be the pulse of the team. We're asking them to, you know, call out defensive schemes. I mean, there's a lot on all of the freshmen's plates. But they aren't backing away from it. You know, there was some hesitation. There was some confusion early on. But it's fun to see the, you know, the moxie. They're starting to get a command. And so the future looks pretty bright.
Makia Gray, India Banks. Banks has scored at least 10 points in four straight games. Makia Gray's had a very good start to her freshman season. And you're right, neither one of them backed down. And they seem to enjoy playing with each other in the backcourt.
Yeah, they do. And I think you'll see Kelsey Marshall's really coming on. You know, she's had more opportunity, I think, to get – she's just a shot maker. I mean, we need her to be a shot maker. So I think when India and Maikia get more command, Kelsey will be getting the ball on time, on target a little bit more too, and that'll help her percentages go up. And then Taylor Mason off the bench for us is just one of the hardest workers ever and just fearless and a great downhill player, great body, great physicality, great rebounding guard. And so, you know, there's four of them that are really important in the rotation, and we're really counting on them.
Your game on Sunday against Kentucky, not only was there great defense, you had a flurry in that third and fourth quarter of tremendous passing, really good offense.
Right, and, you know, that comes and goes with us right now. I think it's the pace. I think it's the comprehension. I mean, you know, I the Columbus effect, when you're driving over a bridge and you don't know, you trust that the bridge then goes down, but you're driving uphill over the bridge and you can't see the horizon. You're not sure. We were playing a little bit that way, like going uphill thinking, all right, I want to go full speed ahead, but I'm just not sure what's ahead. And now they see it, and they see, and they feel a little bit more secure. So our pace went up, and you know, our post players are great passers. And so we kind of inverted the offense a little bit against Kentucky and let our post players do the bust-out dribbles and let our guards leak out. And that was the third quarter. I mean, it was just a simple adjustment, but the post players did a really great job of it.
All right, coming up, you have Alabama State on Friday, and then you have a tournament in Puerto Rico, which we talked about on the TV show for a variety of reasons, is going to be interesting or challenging.
Right. It's just, you know, one of the best things you can say about your team, you know, a team that just should be flexible and adaptive. And we've been, you know, we've been working very closely with the organizers in Puerto Rico. They definitely wanted the University of Miami to come to the tournament. We offered to host it here. There was a lot of discussions. Margie Gill, my operations, actually flew to Puerto Rico and did a site visit to make sure everything was safe. We met with risk management on campus because we want to go. I mean, our players need to see. They need to. We went through the hurricane together here, you know, at my sister's house in Atlanta. We were all together. And it's been a tumultuous kind of preseason, I guess. And we understand the realities of it all. So we're going to show up. We're going to do some one full day of humanitarian work. We have gifts, bags. The players are buying Christmas presents for some of the people for Angel Rodriguez's foundation over there. So, you know, it's just, we're going to make it a great trip.
The conference season is knocking on the door. What will the benefits be from playing this very competitive, hard non-conference schedule going into ACC play?
Well, you know, you can't ever, when you can reflect and go back and say, okay, guys, you know, Duke plays a scheme similar to Maryland, or you say, you know, you can make comparisons. This player, remember the girl from, you know, Michigan State, who had a lefty hook, like that. And so there's a reference point there, and then to also have had some success. So to have the history of some frustrations, to have addressed your weaknesses early on in the season makes you a better team, obviously. But also for this young team to have the reference point of, you know what, you know, we were 1-point game with Maryland with 3 minutes to go. I mean, we had 1 point in the first quarter against Colorado and took the lead. So there are good reference points, too, within the frustration. So a lot of teaching points, and, of course, that's all we want to do down here is teach.
You've played some great teams, but also some really, really good individual players in this non-conference season.
Yeah, to understand what it really takes, you know, to not let your team down, to be given a task, to be – you know, given the privilege of being assigned to an all-SEC player or a Pac-12 player or, you know, an all-conference player, a Big Ten player of the year. You know, when you've had that on your plate before you get into the ACC and you've had the privilege and the honor of having that task given to you, you don't want to fail. I mean, it means a lot to your team that you come through. So we've had that, and I think that'll help us come ACC because, boy, do we have great players coming in. Woof.
Well, you know, you brought in Kentucky, Michigan State, and Maryland. It's not hard to see the investment in basketball on the women's side in those three programs. There's a real pride and tradition factor with those programs.
Right. And you know, it was great yesterday after the game. She didn't get here in time for the game, but I come out of the locker room and I see Shanice Johnson. I also saw Michelle Woods, mm-hmm. but Shelly's been here for a while. But Shanice Johnson, like one of the best players, arguably between her and Tamara, I think the best players ever played here. And I hadn't seen her in a minute. She had knee surgery, and she was walking around seeing the upgrades of this program with tears in her eyes. And I walked her through the film room, and I showed her the new locker room, and I showed her the practice facility. And she had tears in her eyes, and she was like, Coach, I am so happy. Like, and then she turned to Jen Strali, our deputy AD, and said, you've done a great job, understanding that the investment in the program here has just been remarkable as well.
Now, along those lines, When you look down at the other bench on Sunday, there was Lynn Dunn, who was the head coach here at the University of Miami, late 70s through almost to the 90s. And I imagine her reaction had to be the same thing.
Right, exactly. When we played at Kentucky last year, I had a good amount of time with Coach Dunn talking to her because that was a tournament, so we had an off day and we spent some time together. This year, I only got a chance to talk to her before the game a little bit, but she's very proud of this program, and she should be, and we did a special announcement for her because, you know, Lynn Dunn is the Hall of Famer and one of the best coaches ever in women's basketball, but one of the most invested people, too. And she speaks the truth. You know, if you're not a good coach or you're being lazy, she would call me up and call me to the carpet. So I was really happy to see her pride in this place.
She's in the Hall of Fame. You're in the Hall of Fame. I thought it was a pretty cool scene.
Yeah, it was great. And Octavia Blue, too. So it was fun.
All right. Very best of luck in the upcoming weeks here as we approach the holiday. And then we'll talk a lot about the ACC right after the first of the year. But thanks for joining us. Oh, by the way, we were talking earlier before we let you go. You're in on the Don Bailey lines during the broadcast.
Oh, yeah,
you hear them. You like them. What is your evaluation of the Hawkman Don Bailey lines that hijacked the broadcast?
Oh my gosh, the most entertaining moments of my week. Wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble baby, wobble might be the best one. But I am a huge fan of the Hawkman and Crowder, and then Don Bailey just straight fitting those lines in, and I try to tape the segments during the week when if I miss them because, yeah, that's as entertaining as it gets. It's awesome.
It's said on his tombstone, Wobble Baby. All right, Coach, thank you very much, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
That's University of Miami head coach Katie Meyer, and we will continue on the Hurricane Hotline right after this.
This podcast is presented by David Lowe and Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowe and Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. Hotline on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM. Tonight's show is presented by Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC, Miami's premier luxury dealership is Williamson Cadillac Buick GMC. Visit WilliamsonAutomotiveGroup.com. Now, here's the voice of the Canes, Joe Zagacki.
All right, welcome to hour number two of the Hurricane Hotline. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr. Listen, Miami had a great football season. I called it the quarterfinal matchup in the ACC championship game, which is what I think all those championship games should be. You should be playing to get into the Final Four. Miami did not reach the Final Four, but they did reach the Capital One Orange Bowl game. I could not be more thrilled to be in it. I think it's great for the university. I think it's great for the community. I think it's going to be a spectacular week.
I think it's great for the broadcasters because the gifts that we're expecting when we go get our press pass.
A sledgehammer? For the window? Oh, that's something else.
Behave yourself. They can't control that. But just those wonderful media gifts that Larry Wall and those guys make sure that we get that are so fitting.
Oh, guess what? Our guest is the CEO of the Capital One Orange Bowl and of the Orange Bowl Committee. Eric Palms is with us tonight. Delighted to have Eric with us. Good evening, Eric. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good evening. How you guys doing?
We're doing spectacular and looking forward to watching Miami and Wisconsin in the Capital One Orange Bowl game.
Absolutely. Very excited, and what a matchup.
How important is it or was it finally to get the University of Miami back into your game?
Oh, I think it's very important. As you guys know, following the evolution of postseason college football, when we were in the BCS era, midway through it, you know, the Orange Bowl was tied in at the time with both the Big East Conference and the ACC. But that same window where Miami, Syracuse, Virginia Tech, Boston College were making their move to the ACC, we enter into a relationship specifically with the ACC. And at the time, I remember sitting in Keith Tribble, my predecessor's office, that we would see the University of Miami and Florida State every other year. I mean, we just expected that to be. Well, that was 2004 when I was there, and that was the last time Miami was in our game. It's important because it brings the local element combined with the national audience that looks at the game, the visitors that come in. It's the best of all worlds.
Eric, when you talk about the income to this community, Dade, Broward, Palm Beach, then the exposure nationally, what it does for Hard Rock Stadium, and the fact that you're bringing down the Wisconsin faithful at a perfect time a year for them to escape the cold. Just talk to us about the total impact of the Orange Bowl to South Florida.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, from an economic impact standpoint, we do that study every 3 years or so, and the last one we did was in 2015 when we had Clemson playing Oklahoma in the semifinal, and that was over $200 million that was studied between visitor impact and media impact. And to your point, you know, with all the visibility that these games bring, you know, to a national televised audience, and you have a Big Ten team playing an ACC team in two different regions of the country, two powerhouse programs, the rating's going to be, you know, exceptional. And it just brings a spotlight to South Florida at a time of year where you want to showcase of what the weather is like down here and the tropical environment that's not taking place in much across the country. And then beyond that, you know, the Orange Bowl goes back to, you know, 1935. In a community that started, I guess the city of Miami was founded in 1896. So it basically mirrors the beginnings of the city of Miami, which now we call South Florida. And nobody owns the Orange Bowl. It's the community that owns the Orange Bowl. So beyond the monetary assessment, it's just an element. It's a piece of our community that we're staying on the shoulders of many generations. And it still stands. The same mission statement that existed in 1935 stands today. And so it's just, you know, it's a great piece nationally, but as we spoke about it earlier, it means so much to the local community.
Yeah, there's no question about that. It's always been the hallmark event in our town. And I think this year, considering the season the University of Miami had, Eric, and the excitement that was at Hard Rock Stadium, it just seems appropriate that Miami is in the game.
Yeah, I mean, I saw you guys week in and week out as the run was going, and I've been doing this for a long time, and the University of Miami is one of those brands in college football that just belongs at the very top. And when a program like that comes back, you feel it locally, you feel it across the country, because it raises the bar with what college football is across the country. And yeah, you know, as we saw the season that was unfolding, and it wasn't easy. I mean, the hurricane came through this area. The team was displaced, went to Orlando. And, you know, they came back together and went week after week after week, which is hard. We all know that. And as it built up into November, when we saw what happened at Virginia Tech, the game at Virginia Tech, and then the, you know, the Notre Dame game, I mean, it was just cloud nine for, you know, this community. So I know there's disappointment with the way it ended with a loss at Pittsburgh and to losing the ACC championship game. But for, you know, for someone that watches this and lives it each and every year, it's really hard winning championships. You have to build, and you have to build. So to see what the University of Miami accomplished, I mean, my hat's off to Coach Rick, the players, everybody that's involved with the program, because you can see the seeds for something big. To have them in this year's Capitol and Orange Bowl is the perfect way to start that launch to, I think, what everybody wants to get to.
Community-wise, and you talk about seeds and building, explain to our listeners how much the Orange Bowl does for the community, the stadiums that you've built, the youth programs that you have, the fact that you're even trying to get young men scholarships to lower division schools and trying to get them exposure. It's a year-round cycle. It's no longer just the game.
You're correct. I mean, the Orange Bowl Committee is a committee, and we have 350-plus members, and I'm talking to one of them right now, Don Bailey, who's on the Orange Bowl Committee.
He's wearing his orange jacket.
I love it. Yes, yes, absolutely. I hope he wears it on game night. That'd be great.
I'll do that. If you want it, it's done.
Yeah, there's a possibility that's going to happen.
But anyhow, I think the value proposition for these community leaders that give their time and energy to this organization, and as mentioned earlier, standing on the shoulders of generations before them, is by the virtue of the success of the bowl game, you're able to give back to the community in a meaningful way. So we've done a myriad of things, but the heart of what we do is in youth and sports. We've been able to do periodically legacy gifts. The first one was at Moore Park, which for historical buffs was the site of the first bowl games. It wasn't called the Orange Bowl in 1933. It was called the Palm Festival. And we went back there and renovated a park with a partnership with the city of Miami. And since that time, we've done three more, most recently in Homestead at Harris Field. So those are pieces we love to do. We're very involved with youth football and cheerleading because we believe that our genre has been built on the shoulders of what's so special about football here in our community, whether it's youth football, whether it's high school football, whether it's college football, whether it's pro football. It's part of the fabric down here. So we've invested a lot of our resources back into that. We've gone into the schools with a leadership academy. We started a combine, as you mentioned earlier, not for the kids that go to the University of Miami or Florida or Florida State at that level, but the kids that are looking to get to the Division II, Division III, the NAIA level that may not get seen and fall through the cracks. We created a combine at Nova Southeastern, and last year we had 361 participants, and 61 scholarships were awarded that day. And it's just great to give back to the community by virtue of the success of the bowl game.
The teams, though, I say arrive. Miami's going to arrive because they're going to go up to Broward County. They'll stay in Broward. I think they're going to arrive at their hotel on the 25th. Wisconsin probably comes in the same time, right, Eric? Are they coming in on Christmas or Christmas Eve?
Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve.
Comes, and right. Then there's another wave that comes 3 days before the game. And they'll be down here getting acclimated to the warm weather and getting ready for the big bowl game.
And then that week, even though Miami is from Miami, as I mentioned, they'll be staying in Broward County. There'll be all kinds of activities. There's the coaches' luncheon at the end of the week, which is always one of the great celebrations of the Orange Bowl week, and the teams and the players will be participating in different events.
Yeah, I mean, one of the core things about the bowl system has always been it's the experience for the kids because at the end of the day, you know, there's a business side of this, and I live it, and all you all are a part of it. But it really is a reward for an incredibly successful season. So while the University of Miami is in its home market, we're going to treat them like they're coming to a destination they've never been to before. And there's activities all through the week, so starting on the 25th through obviously the 30th, there'll be all kinds of events for the student-athletes, for the coaches, for the official party. And then the university party comes in with the rest of the university community. And we just try to showcase the indigenous qualities of South Florida because there's 40 bowl games across the country. And, you know, when you come to South Florida, you want to experience the tropical environment. So we do that each and every year, but we're focused on making sure that the University of Miami feels that special element. They're staying at a beautiful hotel. They got a great practice facility. And, of course, you know, it'll be a magical night at Hard Rock Stadium.
The way I see it is it's a rehearsal for next year. Because next year, it's the semifinal game.
Well, I did. You know, when you're going through the final stretch, and listen, Miami was well-positioned for an opportunity to play in the playoff this year. And to your point, it was a quarterfinal in Charlotte. And in our minds, there was, you know, a residual benefit if the University of Miami would have gone on, and that is they would have become focused on what the playoff is. Because to your point, next year the semifinal comes to the Capitol in Orange Bowl, and Miami should be right in the thick of it, as Wisconsin should be in the thick of it.
This is this of course is the time of year where everybody in our business wants to change the bowl system and the playoff system.
Right.
So where are you right now with it? You've got the semifinal game next year. In a couple of years, the championship game is going to come here, but you also have an Orange Bowl game that year, so two games in 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're going to expand? Are you happy with four? Seems to be working out pretty good, considering that, you know, going into championship weekend, seven of the top eight teams were in play. And by the way, the one that didn't play got into the semifinals.
That's right. Yeah, it's a great question. And listen, you know, the way I view this discussion is with great balance and understanding that there's different prisms. You know, I represent the Orange Bowl Committee, which is, you know, 84 years into a tradition that we've had a special place. So for the community and the business end of it, you know, we love where it's at right now because we're one of six communities that every 3 years has a national semifinal. And when we do, we have a hell of a matchup as we have this year with the ACC playing either the SEC, Big Ten, or Notre Dame. I do think, you know, the way this was built was there were three contract bowls that were identified, the Rose with the Big Ten versus the Pac-12, the SEC with the Sugar with the SEC versus the Big 12, and then the Orange Bowl, as mentioned, with the ACC versus SEC, Big Ten, or Notre Dame. The other three games are what they call host bowl games that get populated with highly ranked teams. But in the three contract bowls, the Rose, Sugar, and Orange, we have a contract that goes through 2026, and we're guaranteed, you know, semifinals every 3 years through that time. So we have three more semifinals. And that does not mean that the commissioners and Jack Swarbrick from Notre Dame can't get in a room and decide to alter the design of the playoff. But academically speaking, I mean, I think it's worked really well. I think it's the perfect balance between the public's demand for a playoff with what the bowl system means across the country and has meant. I think there's issues that have to be navigated. I mean, you saw the University of Miami this year. They had their bye week taken away because of the Hurricane Irma, you know, impact. And so to play every week, if you think about it, just think of the University of Miami would have played 12 games, then went to Charlotte, won, then had to play a semifinal and then a championship game. It's just a lot to ask of a student athlete. It's not the NFL. It's built differently. So I think there's health concerns. I think there's, you know, a marketplace. I don't know if the market right now from the television industry standpoint is ready to, you know, embrace that type of expansion because it's working so well. And if you look at ESPN, they virtually own every bowl game, and they have a very successful model. So I don't know what that means. But in the end, I think college football has never been more popular. You can see it with the television ratings from Fox to ESPN to ABC, et cetera, that they're doing exceptionally well. And you can see it in the buildings. I mean, look at the crowds that the University of Miami generated at Hard Rock Stadium this year. I mean, it's been exceptional. So from our standpoint, we hope it stays the same. We expect it probably will at the midpoint of this 12-year arrangement. And our focus is to keep the Capital and Orange Bowl on the Tier 1 level.
Eric, explain to our listeners and fans as well how the championship game, who gets the championship game, and how does that come about?
It's a great question because I think people assume when it was announced that it was coming back here in 2021 that it was in the Orange Bowl. And that's the biggest change from the BCS to the college football playoff era, that it's bid out much like a Super Bowl or a Final Four. And so communities bid, not a bowl game. Now, in the case of South Florida, the Orange Bowl committee that's held that space since 1935, that has had 20 national championship games here, when the new model was built, it was our focus, our organization's desire to maintain that rotation coming here to South Florida. So we joined the Miami Dolphins, you know, in Hard Rock Stadium, and the CBBs from Miami-Dade County, Broward County, Palm Beach County, and government. We met with Carlos Jimenez, you know, City of Miami Beach, Broward County, et cetera, and we built a working group to bid after this. It's a very competitive process because every community in America would love to bring the college football playoff championship game to their marketplace. But given what Steve Ross and Tom Garfinkel did, you know, in transforming what is now known as Hard Rock Stadium, and then to combine it with the amenities that South Florida, whether it's hotels, whether it's restaurants, whether it's the entertainment component, there's no better place to bring a major event in the country, in my viewpoint. And so we were pretty bullish about it. We had failed a couple times, falling just short. And we knew why. There was reasons why, because they were moving it around the country, et cetera. But in the end, I think the Orange Bowl Committee, Miami Dolphins, government officials, CVB officials, you know, have come together to build a template that emulates what was going on with the Super Bowl, you know, what Rodney Barreto just successfully did in bringing the 2020 Super Bowl down here. And so we're excited about it. We think it's going to be electric. I mean, we've had championship games down in South Florida, most recently in 2013 when Alabama played Notre Dame. But this is different because the leaders of college football have invested into this college football playoff with the championship game being the celebration of the sport. So you'll see it down here with signage everywhere, with activities and events for all the locals to come out and participate in. There'll be concerts all throughout Friday, Saturday, Sunday night, leading to the Monday night championship game. And it will just be a celebration of college football. And by the way, you know, one of our pitches when we were going after this was, when you put a map of America and you look at where college football players are coming from, this is the capital right here, South Florida, where so many players are coming from. So it belongs here in our viewpoint.
I thought the pitch was Don Bailey and Don Bailey Sr. billboard.
That could have been it.
I thought that was what put you over the goal line.
We had a tour. You know, they have a selection committee that picks the sites. And we had a tour, and none other than Don Bailey was our MC.
Yeah.
And we did drive by a billboard, I believe, along the way, if I'm not mistaken. But
we put on clothes that day.
Exactly. Hey, this weekend you had a basketball classic. Let's touch on that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. We have the 2017 Metro PCS Orange Bowl Basketball Classic, and the doubleheader is Oklahoma State playing Florida State at 2, and Florida State is undefeated, 9-0, and it's followed by Clemson versus Florida, and Florida's off to a great start. Clemson and Oklahoma State have also gotten off to a great November, December, and it's interesting. I was speaking to Leonard Hamilton yesterday about some pieces to the event, but he started it with Keith Tribble. You know, when we got down here in 1993, we wanted to expand the Orange Bowl Festival, and Leonard was the guy that was with us. And the first year was UNLV versus University of Miami, and then we expanded it to a doubleheader and brought in the University of Florida, and we've had Miami pretty much through, but recently it's been Florida State that's been down here. And it's just a staple. It's a great piece. It's at the BB&T Center. And a great way, again, to celebrate college basketball at a time when it's just getting to the conclusion of the college football season. And we're excited about it. It's going to be a great crowd, and we encourage everybody to come out there and participate.
I know it's got to be special to you. You were in team selection, right? Way back when.
Yeah.
You were a team negotiator way, way back.
It's a different business going after college basketball teams, I can tell you. But we've been fortunate. This doubleheader is four great programs, and it'll be awesome.
I have to tell you, my brother shakes me down every year for tickets for the basketball. He said, Don, you can have the football. I mean, he's a Florida grad. Yeah. He said, I want to be on the floor. Get me squared away. They love the basketball part of it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, college basketball in the state of Florida, you see what Coach Larinaga is doing at the University of Miami, which is, you know, incredible and top 10 right now. And what Leonard's been able to build and sustain, you know, at Florida State. And now Florida, you know, Mike White's come in. He's in year 3. And they're rolling. They got to, you know, if you watch the event in Portland, they beat Gonzaga in what I think was the best game of the year. And then held Duke, you know, in check until the very, very end. And they had a big win against Cincinnati on Saturday. So I'm excited about college basketball in the state of Florida. I think it's rich in talent, and having these three programs in the top 25 is just special.
All right, well, we're looking forward to the Miami-Wisconsin week. I know it's going to be a great week for both schools, and looking forward to the game, and hopefully we'll see you. But if not, have a Merry Christmas, and
yes,
we'll see you right before the new year.
Well, I got to tell you, I was listening to the show before you guys put me on, and I just made a note to increase the media gift budget for the two play-by-play guys and color analysts for the two schools. So we're getting ready for you guys.
That's right. It's just medium and XL or double XL works. That's
yeah, because, you know, anything that we happen to receive, I'll be able to take with me when we go on those extensive road trips in the summer, because we have a lot of them this year. We got to go ACC, SEC, Big Ten, and Big 12. Right?
Pac-12 too. We're going to hit them all.
We got to hit them all.
We're going to hit them all. I've done this every time I've been on the air with you, but I have to thank you, Joe, because we were sitting at that ACC media day, I guess it was 3 years ago, and we saw all these coaches and players walking by and saying, we should do a show. I mean, this is incredible, the amount of interviews you can get. And we did it. It's been not only, you know, exceptional, it's been incredibly exceptional. And it was your idea, so we thank you.
Well, I appreciate that. And we'll see you during the holidays here.
You got it. I look forward to it. We'll get together during the bowl week for sure.
All right,
take care.
All right,
okay,
that's the CEO so of the Orange Bowl Committee, the Capital One Orange Bowl game coming up on December 30th, Miami and Wisconsin.
How lucky is the city of Miami and the Orange Bowl Committee to have Eric running the show.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's a Floridian. He raised here.
Yeah.
Lived in this community, understands the importance of the Orange Bowl game. And
cares
and
the kids and the people and everything.
If you're our age group or a little bit before, you know that the Orange Bowl game was always the pinnacle and also the end of the holiday season.
That's right.
It was the final game.
That's right.
Right, and it was the 8 o'clock game on New Year's night, and most of the time the stakes were extremely high.
And it was the only show.
Yeah.
All right? There was no saturation back then. That was the peak of college football.
And everybody tried to copy the Orange Bowl. The funny thing is, we go on this Orange Bowl tour, all the other bowl games now, they're like, well, how'd you guys do that? And they hit Eric up like, well, maybe we ought to steal that for the Peach Bowl or the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, but try.
Yeah, try. All right, when we come back, still to come in this half hour, Hurricanes head coach Mark Richt, the conversation he had with Joe Rose. We'll continue right after this.
In Hotline on the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
Happy to have you back on the Hurricane Hotline. Joe Zagacki, Don Bailey Jr., Mark Richt coming up in a conversation that he had with Joe Rose. The team has been off. Recruiting signing day is like a week from tomorrow.
Yep.
And the team will reconvene on Sunday.
Start on Sunday. Then next week will be like a regular week of practice, like they would be playing Saturday. They're going to let the players off, I think, towards the end of the week, have Christmas, and then come back and start all over and have game week.
Coach Richt said he has a tremendous record in bowl games, but he does have maybe a little bit of a different philosophy. He does not use the bowl game practice for like a spring practice, like a lot of guys do. I don't think he even uses the entire allotment of practices. He uses it to get ready for the game.
He is solely focused on winning the football game and having his team prepared for that bowl game. And I think it's important to note, too, that he had mentioned a couple times the last couple weeks of the season when bowl conversation came up was that the depth issue is not there to have, quote-unquote, a spring game. I guess if you have a
full roster. Well, here's where they are in depth. John Richt, the quarterback's coach, has been playing the role of a safety on the defensive scout team for the last 3 weeks.
That's right. He's
got a helmet on and shoulder pads. He's playing the role of the other team's free safety.
That's right. He's the head hunter. So, you know, they don't have the depth to do that. If you're at 85, if you're at an 85 number, which they're nowhere close to that, and then you have another 20 or 25 walk-ons, then you can take some extra time in scrimmage and get that experience, but that's not the case. And in fairness, too, this team went on a long run and was, I think, it just kind of, as a group, we were worried about the freshmen hitting the wall. I think the unit just was exhausted.
A quick overview, because you and I are diving into Wisconsin now. We had about a minute in this segment. And so when they reconvene on Sunday, I think some of the things on the checklist will be, got to find a way to get completions from Malik Rozier.
That's
a lot of completions. One of the things you can do against Wisconsin, you're going to spend a lot of time getting tackled because they put a lot of people around the ball. But if you break a tackle here or there, as Ohio State did and some others, if you get into the second level, you can go all the way. You can get some big plays, but you got to break some tackles. We got to get the turnover chain back inactive. Mm-hmm. That's got to be an active part. And as always, when you're playing Wisconsin, it is getting behind the chains because they're just going to bludgeon you with their run game.
We talked to Coach Christ, you know, when we were last week when we were doing at the Orange Bowl event, and you know, off the air I started talking offensive line play with him, and he lit up.
He said, "Isn't it a beautiful thing?
it's beautiful. You realize how precise you have to be. 6 inches makes all the difference in the world, and that lets you know where this guy's mind is. He's going to pound you into submission if he can." And they did darn near every single person. And they are going to be a challenge of all challenges.
A lot of teams, a lot of the defenses in the Big Ten lay back. You cannot lay back with them. Michigan kind of went after them, stayed in the game until the fourth quarter, but Michigan didn't have any offense. Miami's going to have to generate some offense. They haven't had a lot of it the last 2 weeks.
No, they haven't. You know, Rozier under 50% against Clemson and Pitt. hasn't thrown more than 15 passes, threw 16 at North Carolina. Yeah. I mean, completions. The last time he was over 15 was 16 at North Carolina. Yeah. And that doesn't bode well for points. And the running game has, you know, been challenged, to say the least, the last couple of weeks. So, you know, it's going to have to take one heck of a game plan. But I'm with you. You know, the takeaways, Miami's going to get the extra possession. And that's what you need.
Their quarterback throws interceptions. Right. Hornibrook throwing 15 interceptions this year.
You're going to like their tight end.
I've already watched him.
I can't Fumagalli. Say his name. There you go. Fumagalli. I knew I'd set you up.
They lost
on
their
that.
Leading receiver, but now Fumagalli, the tight end, he's about 250 pounds.
But my kind of, you know how a fullback, when I see a fullback, a big tailback, and a big tight end in 6'6 and 330 across the board, I kind of get excited.
Well, their first play is going to be the bar. It's going to be nine guys in the line of scrimmage. All right, when we come back, Mark Richt will join Joe Rose and recap the season with Joe Rose. We'll do that right after this on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
This podcast is presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. This podcast was presented by David Lowen Associates in Fort Lauderdale. If you've had a homeowner's insurance claim denied or underpaid, call 844-96-CLAIM. Buick GMC Hurricane Hotline. On the home of the U, Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
All right, let's go right to him. Mark Richt, University of Miami head football coach, as he's all set now at the end of the month, playing the Orange Bowl against Wisconsin. But he's got another important date coming up. That's at December 20th, early signing date. First year for that. Good morning, Coach. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you this morning?
Man, we're doing great. Coach, we get up so damn early. We start drinking coffee about 3 hours ago. We're ready to go. Hey, recruiting. Obviously, right now, big part of what you're doing before you get back to your football team, is it more for you about South Florida recruiting or hitting it out of the state or other parts of the state?
Well, the first thing we got to do is make sure we hit all the guys that plan on being mid-year enrollees. The kids that graduate early will show up in January, because the head coach gets one shot at a home visit, okay? So I got to get all that in before we get to the dead period here and at the end of this week, or I'll not be able to see them at all. You know, I might be able to go back and see their parents or something, but
right.
a lot of these guys will be on campus starting in January. So that's first priority. And then the head coach's visit, you hope, is as close to the signing date as possible. So we do have some guys that aren't mid-year enrollees that still plan on signing on the 20th of this month. So I'm trying to knock out those guys too, you know, the very best I can. So I've been all over the place. Been kind of nonstop. We did have a recruiting weekend with some young men that were in town this weekend, so I stopped in town for a minute to do that. And so it's been busy, but it's been good. Most of the visits I've had is really more of a celebration of a decision that's already been made. And those are the best visits.
Coach, first of all, I don't know, what is the number? How many scholarships do you have for this recruiting class?
Yeah, well, we could, by rule, you could go 25, and you could even go over that number if you have some saved from the year before. So we've got plenty of numbers. The question is, will we have space in the 85? You got to have space for those guys. You're allowed 85 total.
Right.
And you also want to make sure you're bringing in guys that can help you win not only the Coastal but the ACC and a national championship. So you don't want to sign a guy just to say you signed him. You want to sign guys that you really believe can help us get to the promised land.
The other part of that would be, what would be the goal for this early signing? What do you think's realistic December 20th?
As far as a number?
Yeah.
I don't know. Every guy who's coming in January, and there's somewhere between probably 9 and 11 of those, and then there's a lot of guys that just know that they know what they want to do. And those are the guys that you want to do it. We're anticipating a good number, though.
Coach, all right, so on the other end of this, we just found out, or we knew for a couple months now, about Mark Walton and him now going pro, and made it kind of official on his Twitter the other day. You had him for a year. I remember talking to you at the ACC Media Days about Mark Walton. Thoughts about Mark and his, I guess, next step, I could say, in the football world?
Right. Well, first of all, you know, a year ago he was voted by the entire coaching staff the MVP of the team. I mean, we know he's a great runner. We know he's a great pass protector, route runner, ball catchers, special teamer, and just a guy that showed up every day, whether it was the strength and conditioning or practice. The guy, you know, was in his element. He loved it, and he brought a lot of energy to the team. So we missed him. I mean, I know people say, well, Homer came in and did great, which he did, but we still missed a lot that Mark brought. But Mark has known for a while that he was going to go. But he really had a lot of respect for what was happening in the middle of the season. We were having this winning streak, and he didn't want the news of him going pro to take anything away from what was happening on the field. So he kind of kept it under his lid for a minute. And then, you know, after everything kind of settled down, he went ahead and made it public. But I'll say this, I think he'll be a very good pro player. He does so many things that are valuable, you know, that's valuable to a football team. And he does a lot of the things I just mentioned. So I think he'll be a long-time NFL player.
Coach, when do those conversations with guys that are thinking about leaving early take place, and the information you try to get them, and you give them your opinion, right, or you listen to them, or whatever it is?
Yeah, that'll be mostly beginning next week after we get off the road recruiting. You know, there's no time. I forgot the date that guys declare, but there'll be a little bit of time between now and that time to really be able to thoroughly get the information out. I've always wanted to get them the best information possible, and that's from the NFL people. You know, you can hear things from coaches, you know, your college coaches. You can hear things from agents. You can hear things from family members. You can hear all these things, but in the end, it's what the NFL believes about you. And, you know, there's a survey that the NFL puts together to help those guys. But, you know, you can also get some good information from guys that you know that are scouts around the NFL. That'll give you a very realistic view of where they think they stack up.
Coach, what do you do with this time off? I mean, I know what you're doing with this time off right now in between games, but I'm talking about the players. You got a lot of guys on campus, or, you know, it's the holiday season. Right. I know what my wife's making me do. We're going around Christmas shopping and getting the house ready. But what are these kids like? How do you manage the kids on campus or that want to see their family during the holidays?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, they're finishing up school. They're running and lifting with our strength and conditioning staff while, you know, the coaches are out on the road recruiting. We'll start bowl practice on Monday, a week from today. So, you know, we keep them pretty busy. But in regard to Christmas, we're going to give them, I think it's a 3 or 4 day span to go home and then come back. We're actually going to regroup on Christmas night to get the number of practices in, because it's on the 30th of December. We still got to get kind of a normal week once we get back from Christmas. But the guys will get a few days home. And then after the bowl game, there might be, there's at least 2 weeks they'll get to go back home before school starts up again in mid-January.
Coach, I want to ask you about your offense here. We do have one more game left. That's against Wisconsin at the end of the month there. No Richards. No Herndon, huge losses for a team that doesn't have a lot of depth. How do you score points? What's the game plan here as you get set for Wisconsin to find some guys that can pick it up a little bit?
Well, I think what will help is we'll have more time to figure it out. You know, last week we lost Herndon in the Pitt game, and so we knew he was gone for that game. And we had some thoughts as to what we wanted to do. Amon Richards was a big part of some of those thoughts, and then he gets hurt on Wednesday in practice. So kind of hit us quick, and we tried to do the best we could. And, you know, obviously it wasn't good enough. But now that we have a little more time to get guys in the right spots, knowing that Amon's gone, we're hoping that'll help us out.
All right, Wisconsin, this is one of those Big Ten teams, love to run the ball. They got the big uglies up front. That's their old-school Big Ten kind of football. What's a scouting report from your eyes on this team offensively and defensively?
Yeah, I mean, you described them. They are big, physical. They play hard. I mean, they won almost every game. I mean, they're used to winning. They got a lot of confidence. They defensively, I've watched more of them as usual. They swarm the ball. They're knocking people back. They're not going to try to trick you. You know, they're just going to line up and try to whip you. And that's what they've been doing all year, and that'll be the challenge for us.
Hey, Coach, getting back to this recruiting stuff real quickly, some big states you're hitting outside of Florida. Can you give us a little insight without getting in trouble?
Yeah, we were, you know, I went about as far west as you can go as far as people that we are recruiting. I'm allowed to say we're recruiting guys. I can't talk much about them.
Right.
But we're out there in Nevada, Las Vegas, and went through Houston, and then came through a good bit of Atlanta for a minute. And then we were kind of North Florida and working our way down, where this week will be almost all South Florida for me. I don't think I'll do anything other than mostly the Tri-County area here.
Mark, I want to ask you about South Florida. I was just looking at the names. We can say the high schools, right? American Heritage Plantation, sure, and St. Thomas and Northwestern. Just some of the teams that made it, Chaminade, that made it to the state and won state championships, some of those teams. Man, some of those teams got some big-time players. Are you able to – did you go to the state games, and are you able to get to all those kids?
Well, what we chose to do, you could choose to go to a state game, or – you can make a home visit with a kid, with your staff. Now, my staff, once a week, our staff members can go. I could go only once during the recruiting cycle, but our coaches could be in their homes once a week. So we made the decision to go in the homes, have a sit down, have a nice talk, spend time with that personal relationship rather than sit in the stands and watch a game that you can watch on TV. And so we didn't go to a lot of them because we couldn't go twice in 1 week, if that makes sense.
Yeah. How's
and,
the
go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how's the talent overall in South Florida? That's what I wanted to get to. It looks like it's really good this year.
I mean, that's why I came to Miami. That's why I'm at the U, you know, because of the great talent that there is in South Florida and you know, especially the Tri-County area down here. But, you know, you want to go to a place that has players and you don't have to travel too far to see them. And I know I mentioned some of the places we went for some national blue chippers, but they better be a national blue chipper if you're leaving this area to go get them. And that's the case and how we're trying to go about it.
Coach, how much in all the years you've been doing this has social media changed everything when it comes to recruiting? And we see guys, I show Joe every morning when I come in here, look at this video of this guy that said they might be coming down here. Look at this video. Look at this guy. Social media and recruiting, how much has it changed everything in the last 10 or 15 years?
It's huge. It's huge. I think I would say probably, I don't know what percentage, but I would guess 80, 90% of what you see, it's probably how they feel about things. You can learn a lot by just keeping an eye on what they're putting out there, what they're posting. But I think at times they'll throw smoke screens out there, you know, and try to get people all, you know, riled up about, you know, oh, I thought he was coming here, and now he says he's going there. You know, I think they'd like to mess around a little bit too because everybody's paying such close attention.
Mark, do you find most of the top players, do they get burned out on the recruiting thing, or do they seem to love it and just can't get enough of, hey, Rick's coming to see me today and Jimbo tomorrow, can't wait?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think most of them by the end can't wait for it to be over. I think even some of the parents that are so, you know, because there's a lot of parents that get into it too, and they kind of enjoy the attention for them and for their son, and I think they get worn down too. And usually by the time signing date rolls around, everybody's excited about getting it over with and getting to where you're going. And, you know, recruiting really should be about finding the school that's best for you, securing your spot because there's not unlimited spots, and then go recruit the rest of your class. To me, that's the most important thing if I'm talking to my son about what's important in recruiting. But, you know, people get excited about the number of stars that, you know, everybody gets and all that kind of thing, and I can understand that it's exciting. But in the end, you got to learn to focus on what's most important, you know, on the field and in the classroom when this thing's said and done. I think that's the same thing is true in recruiting.
By the way, don't pay attention to those stars or anything you were just talking about, but most people got you three or four in the country right now.
Well, sometimes that's exciting, you know, for everybody. And hopefully they're right. You know, hopefully they're right.
Yeah. Mark, good stuff, man. Really appreciate you coming. You pay attention to that star stuff. Come on, four star. Do you pay attention?
You know who's got what because it means so much to him. I mean, if a guy goes from a 3 to 4 star, I mean, you got to congratulate him, you know, because it is important to those guys. And, you know, we think all of our guys are 4 and 5 stars.
There you go. Coach, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it.
Okay, we'll see you.
Mark Richt.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.